Welcome to NTD News Today. Here are today's top stories. Maine refuses to comply with President Trump's executive order on transgender athletes in women's sports. The Department of Justice files a lawsuit against the state. The UK's Supreme Court rules on the definition of a woman, saying it's based on whether someone is born female. Women's rights campaigners celebrated after the verdict. A kidnapped American pastor is rescued in South Africa. Police and suspects engaged in a shootout that left three dead. Japan kicks off tariff talks with the U.S. today in Washington, and President Trump is attending the meeting in person. Iran now says that uranium enrichment is non-negotiable in the talks for a nuclear deal. And why the Maldives bans Israeli passport holders from the country. White House envoy Steve Witkoff and Secretary of State Marco Rubio head to Paris. The officials will speak with their French counterparts about the war in Ukraine, among other issues.
This is NTD News Today, live from our global headquarters in New York City.
Today is Wednesday, April 16th. I'm Stephanie Cox. Attorney General Pam Bondi announced legal action against Maine for what she called a failure to protect female athletes. The lawsuit comes as the Trump administration threatens to cut off all Maine's federal funding for public schools.
Today, the Department of Justice is announcing a civil lawsuit against the Maine Department of Education. The state of Maine is discriminating against women by failing to protect women in women's sports. Pretty basic stuff. This is a violation of Title IX. The Department of Justice will not sit by when women are discriminated against in sports. This is about sports. This is also about these young women's personal safety.
The announcement follows a February 21st meeting where Trump asked if Maine's Governor Janet Mills planned to comply. Mills responded, quote, "We're going to follow the law, sir. We will see you in court." The Department of Agriculture notified Maine on April 2nd that it was freezing school lunch funding, citing violations of Title IX. The federal law prohibits sex-based discrimination at educational institutions that receive federal funding. The Department of Education says it was referring the matter to the Justice Department. And Britain's Supreme Court makes a landmark ruling defining what definition legally classifies a woman. It clears up an understanding on women's equality in the country.
The unanimous decision of this court is that the terms woman and sex in the Equality Act 2010 refer to a biological woman and biological sex. But we counsel against reading this judgment as a triumph of one or more groups in our society at the expense of another. It is not.
The unanimous vote does not remove protections for transgender people, but states that even with a gender reassignment certificate, transgender people cannot be considered different from their biological sex for equality purposes. The legal challenge began in 2018 when the Scottish Parliament mandated women should make up 50% of public board membership. Officials said transgender biological men can also count as women to fill the quota. Women's rights group Women Scotland challenged the decision, saying it won't further the cause of women's rights and that Parliament went beyond its powers. An attorney for the group says sex is determined before one's birth and is an unchanging biological state. An American pastor who was kidnapped in South Africa has been safely rescued after police engaged in a deadly shootout with his captors.
We can now confirm the safe recovery of a 45-year-old American national victim who happened to be a local pastor. And the victim, who had been allegedly kidnapped in Kwamatlaki location in Gqeberha, was safely reunited with his family.
34-year-old Josh Sullivan was kidnapped by armed masked men while holding church service on April 11th. He was held inside a house, and when police arrived, his captors tried to escape by car during a shootout with police. Three of them were found dead, while Sullivan was miraculously found alive and unharmed in the same vehicle. Sullivan and his family moved to South Africa in 2018 after he and his wife attended missionary training there in 2015. He also attended 2 years of language school to learn the local language of the area where he stayed. President Donald Trump said Japanese government representatives are in the U.S. for a meeting to negotiate over tariffs and the cost of military support. In a post on Truth Social, Trump said he would attend the meeting with his trade and commerce secretaries. Japan's chief trade negotiator said he's looking to convince officials to remove tariffs on Japan.
I'm surprisingly calm this morning, which is a sign that I'm prepared for the talks. As for the aim of the talks, it is to protect the national interest, as I've repeatedly mentioned at the Japanese parliament. I would like to lead negotiations based on what has been thoroughly discussed as what will best serve Japan's national interest and what is most effective.
Ryo Sei Akazawa is set to meet with Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent and Trade Representative Jameson Greer. Akazawa said he believes he can emerge from the talks with a win-win solution for both countries. President Trump put on hold Japan's across-the-board 24% tariff last week, the 10% baseline tariff and 25% tariff on cars, auto parts, steel and aluminum exports are still in place. Japanese Prime Minister Shigeru Ishiba has described the situation as a national crisis. Shares in computer chip makers slumped early today. The drop came after NVIDIA said tighter government controls on exports of computer chips used for artificial intelligence will cost the company an extra $5.5 billion. NVIDIA said its H20 integrated circuits and others would be subject to the licensing requirements for the infinite future. The government said the controls target risks that the products may be used in or diverted to a supercomputer in China. NVIDIA's shares fell almost 6% in pre-market trading. Shares in rival chipmaker AMD dropped 6.5%. NVIDIA announced Monday that it will produce its artificial intelligence supercomputers in the United States for the first time. The news of the new controls came after Senator Elizabeth Warren urged restrictions on exports of NVIDIA's H20 and other advanced AI chips to China. California Governor Gavin Newsom announced today that the state will file a lawsuit challenging President Trump's authority to impose sweeping tariffs. According to a press release, the lawsuit will argue that Trump's use of the International Emergency Economic Powers Act to impose tariffs is illegal. The act gives the president the power to freeze and block transactions in response to foreign threats. Newsom says the current tariffs have led to higher costs and billions of dollars in losses in his state. California has the largest economy among U.S. states and is a massive exporter. Maryland Senator Chris Van Hollen is visiting El Salvador today to push for the release of Kilmar Abrego Garcia, a man mistakenly deported to the country.
I'm here at the airport. I'm about to board my flight for San Salvador. The goal of this mission is to let the Trump administration, to let the government of El Salvador know that we are going to keep fighting to bring Abrego Garcia home until he returns to his family. I hope to meet with representatives of the government. I hope to have the chance to actually see Kilmar and see what his condition is.
And a U.S. district judge is demanding more evidence from officials of what they had done to secure the return of Abrego Garcia. Judge Paula Hinnes yesterday ordered officials to answer questions under oath and show 2 weeks' worth of document requests. She wants to determine whether the Trump administration acted to comply with her order to facilitate the return of Kilmar Abrego Garcia. Garcia entered the U.S. illegally as a teenager. He was granted protection from deportation in 2019. Hinnes suggested she might hold the Trump administration in contempt if she determines it's acting in bad faith in response to her order. Political tensions in the U.S. on full display in Georgia yesterday. Congresswoman Marjorie Taylor Greene was confronted by protesters while speaking at a town hall in Atlanta.
The Democrats have been rioting. They are the party of violence. They are the party that... Go. If you want to sit and listen, you're welcome to listen. Everyone across the aisle.
Three people were arrested at the event and others were escorted out because police said they were being disruptive. But a majority of the crowd of more than 150 were supportive of the Republican. Green is one of Trump's most loyal allies. She has said she's considering running for the U.S. Senate or the governor of Georgia in 2026. Georgia police say officers responded with appropriate force to people who yelled at Green and then resisted removal. Senator Chuck Grassley also faced some opposing voices at a town hall in Iowa yesterday.
I just want to know if you're proud of voting for Trump and that what he's doing in office. Are you proud of everything he's doing right now?
There's no president that I've agreed with 100%.
I didn't say that.
About 100 Iowans were in attendance there. People asked Senator Grassley questions about whether tariffs will impact Iowa's farmers and how Medicaid and Social Security might be affected by spending cuts. One attendee wanted to know whether the alleged gang member held in El Salvador would be brought back and mentioned the Supreme Court order regarding his return. President Trump is taking new steps to safeguard America's national security. He signed an executive order yesterday launching a formal investigation into U.S. reliance on foreign processed critical minerals. NTD's Daniel Monahan has more on that, as well as moves on drug costs and immigration.
Critical minerals and the products made from them are important materials essential for defense, energy, and tech manufacturing. President Trump warns the U.S. economy and military could face serious shortages if global supply chains are disrupted or manipulated by foreign powers like China. Materials like aluminum, lithium, cobalt, and rare earth elements are at the heart of everything from semiconductors to nuclear reactors. Commerce Secretary Howard Lutnick now has 90 days to assess the impact of foreign imports on U.S. industry. The findings will be reviewed by top administration officials, including Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth and Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent. President Trump also took a major step Tuesday to drive down the high cost of prescription drugs. The president signed a sweeping executive order aimed at lowering prices and expanding access, including letting more states import cheaper medications from Canada. The order directs the FDA to simplify the complex approval process that has slowed down state importation efforts, like in Florida, which took over 3 years to get a green light. Prescription costs in the U.S. are about 42% higher than in Canada. The executive order also includes four major price-cutting measures. The first revamps the Medicare drug negotiation program, with the first round of lower prices kicking in 2026. The second aligns Medicare payments more closely with suppliers' actual costs. Currently, Medicare pays as much as 35% over the actual cost for some medications. The third provision aims to ensure Medicare pays a comparable price for prescription drugs, regardless of where they are dispensed. Medicare currently pays up to 60% more for a drug dispensed at an outpatient clinic than for the same medication dispensed at a doctor's office. The fourth action slashes the cost of insulin and epinephrine for treating allergic reactions. Prices could be as low as 3 cents for insulin and $15 for epinephrine auto-injectors for low-income and uninsured patients. The order also targets the drug pipeline, instructing the FDA to fast-track approvals for generics and biosimilars, cuts that could save patients up to 80%. The Trump administration says the order is about transparency, affordability, and putting patients first. President Trump also addressed illegal immigration in an interview aired on Tuesday. The president says he plans to roll out a new program offering money for immigrants in the country illegally to leave voluntarily. Trump said such a self-deportation program would include financial assistance like plane tickets and money and the prospect of re-entering the country later legally. Daniel Monahan, NTD News.
Coming up, the Department of Justice is suing the state of Maine for refusing to ban men who identify as women from participating in women's sports. Major tax changes are being considered in Congress. How will Republicans plan to offset the costs of tax cuts? Some are considering higher rates on wealthier Americans, though the House Speaker is not on board. Authorities released new body cam footage and investigation report related to the death of Gene Hackman's wife. More on all that after the break. U.S. Attorney General Pam Bondi said today the Justice Department has filed a lawsuit against Maine after the state refused to ban men who identify as women from participating in women's sports. Joining us now to discuss is Jonathan Butcher, a senior research fellow in education policy at the Heritage Foundation, and Jeremy Rosenthal, trial attorney and founding partner of Rosenthal, Calibus, and Therrien. Good to have you both with us. Just to start off, I'll start with you, Jeremy. How strong is the Justice Department's case, and what do you expect to come of it?
It's an interesting theory. Title IX does not allow the federal government to, and in particular schools, to discriminate on the basis of sex. And traditionally, that has meant traditional gender discrimination. It's meant also sort of sexual harassment. If I can pick out a theory here that I think the Justice Department is getting at, what they're saying is that athletes who are female athletes are being discriminated against because they are being required to compete against athletes who they refer to as biological boys, what I think most folks would call transgender people. Their argument sort of assumes there's really no such thing as transgender, that it's sort of boys who just volunteer to go play in girls' sports and that the state of Maine is okay with it. I think it's a little more nuanced than that, but this is politics for the administration. Transgender issues have been sort of low-hanging fruit for them, sort of chum that they know that a lot of the followers like of the administration. And a lot of these nuances will probably be lost on the public.
And I do want to get into more of the politics side of this a little later on. But Jonathan, you've researched and testified on education policy around the U.S., including testimony before the U.S. Commission on Civil Rights. How do you expect this case to go, and how strong do you think the case is?
Well, this is not an issue of politics. This is an issue of safety and protecting civil rights. Maine is violating the civil rights of women and girls by allowing boys to participate in athletics. They are denying women an equal opportunity, which is a violation of the Civil Rights Act and the Education Amendments of 1972. We are born male or female, and even the slight discrepancies that occur are very rare, but even among those, you are still born with the ability to produce either sperm or eggs. So this is not an issue of somewhere being in between, right? If we are going to give equal opportunity to women, they should not be required to compete against boys.
Now, I want to turn back to you, Jeremy. The lawsuit comes days after the administration tried to cut off Maine's federal funding for public schools and its school lunch program over this transgender issue. Maine's Democratic Governor Janet Mills called this executive overreach. Your reaction to start with?
Well, what she's saying is that there might be two or three athletes in particular that fit in this category, and over this, we're going to cut off thousands of school lunches. Doesn't make a lot of sense to me. And there are, again, to kind of talk about sort of some of the nuances here. Maine is not alone when it comes to transgender athletes. Ohio, J.D. Vance's home state, has provisions for athletes that are in transition to compete. And medicine dictates, and most states require a certain level of treatment and hormone therapy and other types of objective requirements. It's not simple as this is a boy and this is a girl. That's the political side. And again, that's kind of sort of boogeyman politics. But getting back to the legal issue here, are women discriminated against because they are being forced to compete against biological males? Where the administration may find some success here, and I don't know if this is true, is that the state of Maine does not require as stringent hormone requirements as, say, Ohio does, or Missouri. That's another state that allows trans athletes to compete. Or Utah, that's another state that allows athletes in transition. But the idea that there's just no such thing as transgender people, I don't think a jury is really going to go for that argument. Also, the governor of Maine is defending her own state constitution, which they have a bill in place that sort of establishes that this is the law in the state of Maine. If the Justice Department can do it through a lawsuit, that's fine. In some ways, it's almost relieving that they're going to the courts for this instead of executive actions and trying to threaten Maine to come to the table and try to make a deal, as is the case with this administration.
Okay, and just for a response, Jonathan, on that point of whether a jury is likely to find that there are no transgender people, if that is indeed going to be one of the questions in play here. But also interesting to note that in a way the Trump administration is charging Maine officials with overreach as well. Your response, Jonathan?
Well, surveys, sure. Well, surveys find that across America, Americans do not like the idea of boys having access to girls' private spaces. It's pretty clear in the polling that having boys participate in girls' sports is not a popular issue. So I think that you will find widespread support for the idea that we can protect women by making sure that boys don't have access to their bathrooms and locker rooms, especially among teenagers. So I think it is, as was said, important that the Trump administration is doing this through the courts, because I think that will give us a lasting precedent to say that there are two sexes, right? There is male and there is female. And any anomalies that we see, again, which are rare, still show that you are born either able to produce sperm or eggs. And so this is an effort of reinforcing the Civil Rights Act. And that's why it is essential that this be done through the courts and be made something that will last.
Yeah, let's look at this issue of precedent, potential precedent being set here. Jeremy, this lawsuit is likely the first in a series of similar legal challenges, as you've alluded to, with various other states having similar types of policies. So what could be the implications nationwide for this case?
Well, there's a couple things, too. First off, these suits talk about athletics, and we were just talking about locker rooms. Those things are different. And I don't know necessarily what one has to do with another. I don't know that that this lawsuit is trying to keep boys out of women's locker rooms. I think that's already the law. I'm pretty sure that it is. Also, the attorney general mentioned safety. The athletes who won in these cases in Maine that are so of note are races. Somebody won a skiing race. I that might relate to safety in some way that I don't know. But I would expect the administration to get a little more aggressive when it comes to their Title IX position. It's a nuanced one, and it's a unique one, and one that I am sort of interested to see how the courts do it, because arguing that these women who have competed have to compete against transgender people who beat them and beat them convincingly, and picking on a state that probably has the least regulations when that comes, that's probably an interesting start, and we'll see what the courts say about that. It will be interesting to see if the Trump administration does indeed go after Ohio or Missouri or Utah, other states that allow trans athletes to do that. So I'll be very curious to see if the administration does indeed go after some states like that.
And Jonathan, honing in there on this contrast between athletics and locker rooms, those two issues adjacent, related, I'll have you comment on that. But also, if the judge rules that men in women's sports does not violate Title IX, how could, or men who identify as women, could that impact cultural norms?
Well, it could be significant because these policies travel together. Oftentimes, the policies allow for boys to participate in girls' sports. They also have policies such as in California and other states and even districts around the U.S. that allow teachers to hide information from parents, health information, when a child comes and says they are confused about their sex in a K-12 school. So schools are able to actually get in between parents and their children in crucial health decisions. Per the point about how these boys participating in girls' sports won handily, well, that's because they're boys. And just because there are some sports that don't involve physical contact doesn't mean that there aren't other examples. I would point to the volleyball games in which girls have been hit in the face by a spike from the other team, from a boy who is playing, or the cases in which there were mixed martial arts competitions where a boy actually broke most of the bones in a girl's face. There are plenty of examples, including rugby as well as basketball. So this is most certainly an issue of safety as well as an issue of civil rights.
Now, Jeremy, you said earlier the administration is sort of trying to spotlight this issue to damage Democrats. And critics have said that. Trump has warned Maine's governor that his political career would suffer from his stance on Title IX. How much momentum do you think this issue has right now in public opinion, and which direction is it trending in your view?
To this gentleman's point, in the state of Maine, this passed. This is the law in Maine. This is what the citizens of Maine want. The federal government doesn't like it. So I would say that Governor Mills is probably scoring points in the state of Maine for defending this. And Donald Trump is certainly scoring points with his constituency for doing this fight. That's what wedge politics is about. And we know what wedge cases are, because we're trying to stop two or three athletes by not feeding 1,000 or 10,000 students in Maine. So obviously, I think that anybody would agree that a school meal program or a nutrition program would certainly take priority over something this insignificant. In Texas, we have transgender issues are very big. In some instances, our politicians don't want to talk about the power grid. They would rather talk about transgender issues, because I think, to his point, this is sort of low hanging fruit. Most people would agree that boys shouldn't be competing in girls' sports, but science tells us that's a lot different. And we know that because states all over this country have very comprehensive, policies and laws regarding hormone therapy and things like this. So we know that this is a very, very complicated issue, but one that is obviously very highly emotionally charged. If a judge rules in favor of the state of Maine, it will be interesting to see where it goes. And if the judge rules in favor of the administration, it'll be interesting to see what leverage the administration has to sort of get other states in line with its view. But to your original point, I think this is good politics for Governor Mills. I think that this is probably, you know, she owes the administration a thank you. And I'm sure the administration, they know what they're doing, too, when it comes to motivating their supporters, that everybody wins in something like this when you're going after somebody in their home state.
All right. And Jonathan, with the last word, you're in education, immersed in that, and where this whole debate is taking place right now. You've said earlier that you believe the trend is going in the other direction. So if just to finish off with, we've got about a minute left, if you can take it home.
Sure. Well, to say that this is not a significant issue is an insult to the girls who spent their high school careers training to stand on the podium and then to lose to a boy. So it is certainly not fair to those students who have worked very hard to be successful in their sport, and then to find themselves losing to a boy that they never thought they'd have to compete against. So this is a matter of protecting those young women and giving them equal access.
All right. Jeremy Rosenthal, Jonathan Butcher, great to speak with you both. Thank you so much for putting your minds to this very important topic at this time.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And lawmakers digging into details on changes to tax rates. With several tax cuts on the table, some Senate Republicans are floating tax hikes for the wealthiest. Others say it's not an option. NTD's Melina Weisskopf has more.
Republican lawmakers are getting down into the details and crafting their massive budget bill. Tax rates are a major part of the discussion.
The hard work of ensuring that there isn't a $4 trillion tax increase on the American people at the end of the year.
President Trump has promised to eliminate taxes on tips, overtime, and Social Security, leaving the question of how the costs will be offset. This week, a Democrat congressman representing Silicon Valley said Congress should tax his constituents more.
And when the guy who represents more billionaires than any person in the world is saying tax them more, how this is a hard vote for the other 434 members of Congress. If we were to get rid of the tax giveaways for the billionaires and the very rich, and at the same rates that we had in the 1990s, a time of high economic growth in this country, we would raise $5 trillion just by doing that.
Contrary to traditional party opinion, some top Senate Republicans are expressing openness to higher taxes on the wealthy.
To discuss is raising from 37 to 39.6 on the very group of people you talk about. Now, that doesn't mean it's going to happen.
Republicans plan to renew Trump's 2017 tax cuts, but could give it some tweaks. Meanwhile, other Republicans are firmly rejecting the idea, the House Speaker saying he prefers cuts across the board.
I'm not a big fan of doing that. I mean, we're the Republican Party, and we're for tax reduction for everyone. I wouldn't put any money on any of that yet. I would say stay tuned. The next 5 to 6 weeks are going to be critical.
As for the corporate tax rate, President Trump is undecided.
Does the president support raising the corporate tax rate to pay for all these other tax cuts he wants to see move through Congress?
Look, I've seen this idea proposed. I've heard this idea discussed, but I don't believe the president has made a determination on whether he supports it or not.
Republicans are aiming for May to pass the massive budget bill. Reporting from Washington, D.C., Melina Weisskopf, NTD News.
New York Attorney General Letitia James, known for her high-profile prosecution of Donald Trump, is now facing legal trouble of her own. The Federal Housing Finance Agency has referred James for potential criminal prosecution, alleging mortgage fraud. According to federal documents cited by multiple media outlets, James listed a Virginia property as her primary residence, despite being legally required to live in New York as a state official. She's also accused of misrepresenting the size of a Brooklyn building on mortgage documents, and even listing her father as her husband on past loan applications. Her office calls the referral political retaliation and says she won't be intimidated. Former President Biden returned to the spotlight for the first time since leaving office. Biden spoke yesterday at a conference in Chicago, zooming in on issues like Social Security and rights for people with disabilities.
73 million Americans receive Social Security. From their first paycheck for their entire life, they pay into Social Security. In return, they count on Social Security to be for them when they're going to need it. Folks must never, ever betray that trust or turn our backs on an obligation.
Yesterday marked the 85th day since Biden left the Oval Office. The conference promoted the event as his first post-presidency speech, though he also spoke at two recent events with less publicity. Biden was joined by former Maryland Governor and Social Security Administrator Martin O'Malley, along with two sitting U.S. senators. Remember when people were reporting drones all over the sky last year in New Jersey? The Federal Aviation Administration is now testing systems to detect drones. The agency will be conducting tests for 2 weeks in Camp May, New Jersey. They'll use equipment like remote ID, acoustic array, and X-band radar. The FAA wants to know if these technologies work and whether they interfere with aircraft navigation systems. Technicians will also fly about 100 drones, ranging from smaller than a pound to more than 1,300 pounds. In December, federal security officials said what people were seeing in New Jersey was a combination of drones flown by commercial enterprises, hobbyists, and law enforcement. Still, the FAA is under pressure to do a better job identifying airborne drones. Two U.S. service members are dead and a third is in critical condition after their vehicle crashed while patrolling the southern border in New Mexico. This happened near Santa Teresa yesterday morning, 13 miles north of El Paso, Texas. A Defense Department task force said the cause of the crash is under investigation. It has not yet released the names of the victims. The Pentagon has deployed thousands of troops to the border in recent months as part of President Trump's efforts to close the border to illegal immigrants. Authorities yesterday released new body cam footage and an investigation report related to the death of Gene Hackman's wife. The report details some of the last emails, phone calls, and internet searches by Betsy Arakawa in the days before her death. The document indicated Arakawa was scouring for information on flu-like symptoms and breathing techniques. She died in February of hantavirus pulmonary syndrome, a rare rodent-borne disease. Gene Hackman is believed to have died about a week later of heart disease with complications from Alzheimer's disease. A review of Arakawa's computer showed she was actively researching medical conditions related to COVID-19 and flu-like symptoms. The searches included questions about whether COVID could cause dizziness or nosebleeds. She also had mentioned in an email to her masseuse that Hackman had woken up in mid-February with flu or cold-like symptoms, but that a COVID test was negative. A man is facing charges after a security camera caught images of him drawing a squash sticker on a Tesla in north central Connecticut. The alleged incident happened March 26th in Avon, about 9 miles west of Hartford. Police have charged Steven Weinberger with criminal mischief and breach of peace. Investigators say he drew the Nazi symbol on the driver's side of the door of the Tesla using a black permanent marker. Weinberger has admitted to police he drew the swastika because he was upset with the current political climate in the country. He also said he didn't know who owned the Tesla. As talks for a nuclear deal continue, Iran now says that uranium enrichment is non-negotiable. Here to talk more about this with us is NTD national security correspondent and former counterintelligence agent Jason Perry. Jason, good to see you. What does this mean for a possible nuclear deal with Iran?
Well, one of the issues here is that Iran is saying their nuclear program is for civilian use, such as providing power to the country. However, for that type of thing, uranium enrichment should be somewhere between 3% and 5%. But according to U.S. envoy Steve Witkoff, Iran has enriched uranium up to 60%. That's 60%. And at that level, they could use it to make a nuclear weapon. Iran's foreign minister, Abbas Araghchi, talked about the issue today. Let's hear what he had to say.
What is certain is that Iran's enrichment program is a real accepted matter. We are prepared to build trust and address any potential concerns, but the core issue of enrichment itself is not negotiable.
So according to him, uranium enrichment is off the table when it comes to talks on a nuclear deal. However, that could be a way to possibly influence the actual talks that are done in private. Just yesterday, State Department spokesperson Tammy Bruce explained that what is said in public is different than the actual negotiations in private. And she said the U.S. is focused on the end results, not what people say, but the actions they take. And the next talks between the U.S. and Iran will take place on Saturday.
This is a post that the dictator of Iran.
All right, Jason, back with you. In another development, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu visited troops in the Gaza Strip yesterday. Did anything stand out to you about his visit?
Well, what stands out to me about his trip is also Iran, since Israeli troops are in the Gaza Strip fighting Iran-backed terrorist groups. Now, Iran has given millions of dollars to Hamas and also provided them with weapons and training. Now, Israel's Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu also brought up Iran while he was there in the Gaza Strip. Let's hear what he had to say.
This is a post that the dictator of Iran, Ayatollah Khamenei, released today, in which he explains why Israel must be destroyed. He is doing this during negotiations with the Americans. We are fighting for our existence. We are fighting for our future.
And Israel's defense minister, Israel Katz, was also there, and he said they're going to keep increasing the pressure until Hamas releases the hostages.
All right. Well, on the other hand, though, critics of the war in Gaza, the Gaza Strip, have accused Israel of genocide. And recently, the Maldives said they're going to ban Israeli passport holders from entering the country over the war in the Gaza Strip. Can you tell us more about that?
Well, the Maldives actually just ratified a law banning Israeli passport holders from entering the country. And after that, they posted on X to let others know about it. Now, the Maldives government said it was in response to, quote, continuing atrocities and ongoing acts of genocide committed by Israel and the Palestinian people. Now, of course, Israel has firmly rejected these accusations of genocide, saying they're acting in self-defense. So what stands out here to me is that if they accuse Israel of committing genocide, but they haven't really done anything to China and their accusations of genocide against the Uyghur Muslims in the Xinjiang region. And in 2019, there was an independent tribunal court that actually found the Chinese Communist Party guilty of forcefully taking organs from prisoners of conscience. And they were mostly Falun Gong practitioners, and they were still alive, and their organs were then sold on the black market for transplants. So to see them doing this against Israel without China also being included in this conversation means there could be something else behind their decision to ban people holding Israeli passports.
Right, and Falun Gong or Falun Dafa, you mentioned there being a spiritual discipline that came from China. All right, thank you so much for your time today, Jason.
Thank you.
And next, the U.S. has placed an $8 million bounty on two Mexican drug cartel leaders. The men are accused of trafficking huge quantities of fentanyl and other deadly drugs into the United States. Here's that story.
On Tuesday, the Department of Justice unsealed charges against Mexican brothers Johnny and Jose Hurtado Olascoaga. The department said the brothers were responsible for the resurgence of La Nueva Familia Michoacana organization. According to the DEA, the cartel is responsible for importing tons of methamphetamine, heroin, cocaine, and fentanyl into the U.S. every year. The brothers were charged by a federal grand jury in Atlanta. The U.S. Attorney's Office for the Northern District of Georgia says it has worked closely with the Treasury and State Departments to indict the two individuals, including the placing of a multi-million dollar bounty on them.
The State Department has announced rewards, offers of up to $5 million and $3 million for information leading to the arrest of Johnny Aruto and Jose Aruto, respectively.
The DEA Tuesday praised the Trump administration's decision to designate cartels as foreign terrorist organizations, saying it gives law enforcement greater authority to tackle them.
The FTO designation has allowed law enforcement to apply enhanced counterterrorism authorities to drug cartel operations, something we believe that will have a greater impact in the fight to protect our communities.
The DEA said Tuesday it seized over 100 pounds of fentanyl and $300,000 of suspected drug proceeds in 24 hours. It also announced 22 arrests. The DEA's acting special agent in Atlanta says the fentanyl seized was enough to kill more than 23 million people. The Justice Department also charged seven people with allegedly laundering money from the cartel's activities through a business in Georgia.
The Trump administration is handing over control of more than 100,000 acres along the Mexican border to the Army. The Interior Department says this will help prevent illegal immigration. The department said yesterday the U.S. Army will hold the land for 3 years. This will allow for the construction of additional infrastructure and patrols by federal personnel. It said the transfer will help prevent illegal crossings and drug smuggling across the border, but also aims to protect ecologically sensitive areas from foot traffic. The White House envoy, Steve Witkoff, and Secretary of State Marco Rubio heading to Paris. The officials will speak with their French counterparts about the war in Ukraine, among other issues. And Ukraine announces that it's close to signing a minerals deal with the U.S. What else Kyiv is saying about Russia and the temporary truce and China's involvement in the war. And the U.S. cuts more than $200 million in grants at the State Department as China retaliates against U.S. officials over a new policy on Tibet. More on all that after the break. Cox, and this is World Watch. White House envoy Steve Witkoff and Secretary of State Marco Rubio are on their way to Paris. They'll meet with their French counterparts to discuss a range of global issues. The State Department said the visit aims to advance President Trump's plan to end the Russia-Ukraine war. While in Paris, the officials will also discuss ways to advance shared interests in the region. A French government spokesperson said the Middle East would be a focus of the discussions as well. Witkoff and Rubio are expected to be in Paris for talks through Friday. French jails experienced another wave of attacks last night. Several cars were set on fire at the Tarascon prison in southern France. A car was also set on fire in front of the home of a prison guard. The overnight attacks followed gunfire and arson at least 9 prison facilities the night before. On Monday night, a suspect fired an automatic weapon at the main entrance of a prison in the southern port city of Toulon. French prosecutors have opened an investigation alleging terrorist conspiracy and attempted murder. Top officials described the attacks as a response to renewed government efforts to fight drug trafficking. Ukraine accuses Russia of violating the temporary energy ceasefire. The U.S. brokered a 30-day truce on energy infrastructure in March. A spokesperson for Ukraine's foreign ministry now says Moscow is repeatedly violating that deal.
Russia has already violated this agreement over 30 times, meaning more than once a day, probably, if you take it on average, with damaging our critical energy grid, our critical energy objects. So unfortunately, we can see these Russian violations, and we're sharing them with the United States.
Yesterday, Russia accused Ukraine of violating the energy truce six times in less than 24 hours. The Ukrainian spokesperson denied the accusations, saying Kyiv is still following the agreement. He also gave an update on the rare earth minerals deal with the U.S. The spokesperson says the two countries have made substantial progress in their talks. He added that Ukraine is ready to sign a memorandum in the near future. And the spokesperson also touched on China's involvement in the Ukraine war. Two Chinese nationals have been taken as prisoners in eastern Ukraine while fighting for Russia. The spokesperson says China supporting Russia in the fighting could seriously harm its relations with Ukraine. He added that direct dialogue with China is necessary to avoid a crisis of confidence. Vice President J.D. Vance and his family will travel to Italy and India this week and next week. They'll meet with national leaders and visit cultural sites. Vance's office said his trip will include visits to Rome and New Delhi, along with the Indian cities of Jaipur and Agra. In Rome, Vance is expected to meet with Prime Minister Giorgia Meloni. Vance will also meet with Vatican Secretary of State Cardinal Pietro Parolin. The vice president is expected to participate in ceremonies on Easter Sunday as well. While in India next week, Vance is expected to meet with Prime Minister Narendra Modi. President Donald Trump is expected to make his first foreign trip to Saudi Arabia next month. Pope Francis today met with the hospital leaders and staff who treated him during his hospitalization last month. It was a total of about 70 people. The Pope thanked everyone individually and told them to keep up the good work. He assured everyone he would pray for them, and he asked for prayers for himself. The Pope was hospitalized for 5 weeks with pneumonia. The State Department is announcing more cuts to its agencies, this time canceling millions of dollars in grants to overseas programs. This as the Chinese regime retaliates against the U.S. over its new policy on Tibet. NTD Washington correspondent Jack Bradley has the details.
The State Department, the arm of the executive branch that directly engages other countries, they just announced they're canceling nearly 140 grants worth nearly $215 million. And take a look at this post on X from Secretary of State Marco Rubio saying that the taxpayer-funded grants were going to what he calls misguided programs. He mentioned specifically programs like this one in Lebanon called Building the Migrant Domestic Worker-Led Movement and also Get the Trolls Out in the United Kingdom. And regarding the Trump administration's tariffs, State Department spokeswoman Tammy Bruce called these policies a great reset to the world economy.
President Trump is the only person that can undo the Leviathan that this trade framework became around the world, and he's doing it. And I've been watching this coverage, the pearl clutching. It's been remarkable. This is going to be one of the greatest resets of many resets that the Trump administration has implemented, and it's going to make a difference not just for the American people, but for all those countries that realize that this has to change.
This comes as the U.S. tariffs on China total 145%, while China has tariffs on the U.S. at 125%. Meanwhile, the Chinese Communist Party is placing a new round of visa restrictions on U.S. officials. Here's why. About 2 weeks ago, the U.S. put visa restrictions on Chinese officials who restrict foreign access to Tibet. That's because the Chinese regime denies U.S. diplomats and journalists access to Tibet. So U.S. diplomats cannot help U.S. citizens traveling in Tibet with things they normally help with, like helping obtain a passport, emergency aid, or legal support. All the while, the U.S. allows Chinese diplomats and journalists broad access in the U.S. According to a 2023 State Department report, U.S. diplomats made 3 requests for official travel to the Tibetan region, but were denied each time. The CCP invaded Tibet in 1949, turning the region into a surveillance state with multiple labor camps. A March report by the U.S. Commission on International Religious Freedom said that the CCP is committing cultural genocide against Tibetan Buddhists. Reporting by Jack Bradley, NTD News.
Stay with us and we'll bring you more news right after this break.